Hello and welcome to Nikon Report, your weekly roundup of all the latest Nikon news and all other photographic announcements that we found interesting. It's Konstantin here.
And this is Becky.
Whoop whoop.
Woohoo!
No announcement this week.
No, we didn't get a surprise announcement from Nikon this week, as much as we might have liked them to throw in a sneaky little extra one.
52 announcements a year. That would be amazing. Every week, something new.
We'd have lots to talk about, I have to say. We'd not have a chance to digest the previous announcement before a new one came out. So obviously last week, the 24 1.7DX lens was released. The pre-order link is now open and ready. You can pre-order yours from Grays. We are expecting our shipments in the next couple of weeks, which is exciting. Now, the odd thing with this lens, despite the fact that it is geared towards DX users and owners, is that not many or any influencers and YouTubers have managed to put hands on it, which is a little bit unusual, I would say.
In contrast to Nikon Z8, where all you have to do is just register on YouTube and you get the Z8 automatically sent to you by Nikon, you know, which is strange, but this is a lens that would be aimed at DX users who are, according to Nikon, are very young and passionate, wearing beanies, taking lifestyle shots, you name it. I mean, from latte art to wearing beanies in the public spaces.
Those are the only two options.
Absolutely.
Apparently.
Otherwise, you're banned from the internet.
But in all seriousness, it is an odd decision not to have given early access of these lenses to the internet folk. We obviously are not like top prime level influencers, but those people that would actually make really, really good use of this lens. I could easily see this being like also a second camera setup lens. You know, mm-hmm. If you've got your main camera and then your second kind of vlogging camera is a Z30 or a Z50 with the 24mm on, that's a great setup.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a 35mm focal distance equivalent on DX body. And therefore, it's a good all-rounder lens for a lot of people, from street photography to travel to vlogging, you name it. And it's interesting to me. I think they just didn't want to take away all the excitement around Z8. Mm. So, you know, so that's why they thought maybe all the people are busy with all the Z8 tests, you know, the overheating, the waterproof, everything, you know, crash test, you name it. And they thought, well, if we leave a 24 and give it to every YouTuber, they probably won't have enough time to film the content.
Right.
I don't know. I wish we would see more videos, but the only one that we saw so far was by Richie, who actually didn't just do a video on the lens, but also compared it with 26 and 28 mil lenses, which I think it's kind of a natural question that people would ask. Why would I go for this one over another lens? So what did he have to say, Becky?
So it was a really good video, actually, from Rishi, as all of them are. And he kind of broke it down in terms of size and weight, the differences between them, obviously the physical, cosmetic, and also build quality differences there. But what he also did was compare the image quality of the three lenses. So you can see tests between them wide open. And the kind of short and sweet of it is obviously the 26mm, which is the most expensive of all three lenses, is the one you get what you pay for on that one, right? Whereas the 28mm and the 24mm, it looks like wide open, at least sharpness-wise, they're quite similar. But do go and check out his video to see all the focus breathing tests, the bokeh tests, you name it, it's all in there, because I'm definitely not going to summarize the whole thing in a few minutes. I do recommend having a look at it if you are a user of both full frame and DX, because a lot of us don't just have one camera.
Yeah.
We've got a DX camera and a full-frame camera. And then that also makes the decision a little bit tougher, I would say.
That's true. One of the interesting things that we've noticed is that Rishi said that he's using ZFC for all his personal stuff over the bigger cameras like Z9 and Z8.
That's right.
Which was surprising to me, actually. I thought he would shoot large format on film. He wouldn't.
I don't know about that.
But yeah, what I'm definitely looking forward to is actually testing those three lenses myself.
Yeah.
One thing I want to ask you, obviously we have a 24 1.8 full frame lens as well,
mm.
but we don't have 28 1.8.
Mm.
Do you think Nikon won't release 28 1.8? And do you think that we will get something like 28 1.2 or 1.4 wide aperture instead?
Ooh, that is a really good question. So I was an early adopter of the 28 1.8 f-mount, the G lens. I really liked that mm-hmm. lens. I ended up kind of trying to 24 was never the lens that I went for, although arguably those two lenses are quite similar in, mm-hmm. in most respects. But the 28 was a lens that I had for a good long while. I really liked the fact that it was a 1.8 aperture. was a bit bigger, obviously, than the 28 f/2.8 is this little muffin lens. Mm-hmm. I would love to see them do a 28 1.4 though, because that was a superb, magical lens in the F mount.
But do you think they would go for 1.2 instead? Because obviously with all the 1.2 50s and 85s,
yeah,
and 35 also is rumored to be 1.2. Do you think we also get 28 1.2 as well?
I think if we get a 35 1.2, we won't get a 28 1.2. So sadly, no. But those wider focal lengths are such a personal thing for each person, you know, they're such a kind of individual choice. So I was having a conversation with someone just today about the fact that their go-to had been 35. They found that they shot 90% of their stuff on 35 mil, whereas for me, the 28 f/2.8 lives on my FM3A. So it's a personal choice.
Absolutely. You say it's a personal for persons. I saw a video the other day where it says, look at this aggressive looking man standing in an aggressive way, being aggressive, you know. But let's not get away from 24DX launch and let's talk about the timing, because some people ask the question, why this lens now? And one of them was Tom Hogan.
That's right.
From all the complaints that the lens had, and the one of them is being lack of VR.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikon Z bodies not having VR,
he's
asking, well, what's the point? We have three bodies that don't have VR, Z30, Z50, and ZFC. We haven't got 200 to 600, which everyone thinks is going to come out any second now.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the point? Do you think Nikon planned to release it? Do you think they plan to release some bodies to go with it? And we talked about potentially having a VR on a DX sensor would be the next step for Nikon to do. Or do you think Nikon works in a mysterious way and say it comes out when it comes out?
Nikon always work in mysterious ways. However, let me answer that question with an excerpt from Tom's article for you. So he says, the question a lot of people have is why this lens now? It doesn't have VR after all, making it less interesting for the current Z30, Z50, ZFC triplets. It leapfrogs the 200 to 600 that's been on the roadmap far, far longer. So a lot of people are scratching their heads. Or is Nikon bridging two camera releases, Z30 and future Z something, with lenses to keep DX in people's minds? Or is it just release when ready in Nikon's development teams now? I'd vote for Nikon originally intending to make more of a DX punch this spring, at least two lenses and one camera, but it might just be release when ready in order to keep Nikon in the news as much as possible. And I will add my own sort of take on that, which I think is, I do think we will see a DX body soon. That's my feeling. I have no evidence upon which to base that supposition, but I do feel like with the 12-28 having just come out and the 24 1.7, it's like, okay, good. Now we need another camera because the three existing, the Z50 is unfortunately a little bit behind the times now. Z30, obviously great starter camera. ZFC, beautiful retro camera. We love it. But yeah, it's missing. We're missing a Z90 or something.
That's right. I think, you know why I know there's 50s behind times? Because of micro USB port and lack of battery charging in camera. I think you're right. I think we need the vibration reduction on the sensor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the next thing. And I think the lens is not having vibration reduction. Like, one of the questions was, why 16-50 lens is so small and has vibration reduction on it, but 24 doesn't?
That's a good question. You know,
because if 16-50 wouldn't have vibration reduction, then we would say, well, maybe it's too difficult to put inside the lens, you know, but it's definitely not. It's a possibility. Maybe it would make the lens slightly larger, but it wouldn't be significantly large per se.
I do see what you mean there.
And I think since we have those two lenses in and with the possibility of having vibration reduction on the sensor, as well as maybe potentially future technologies coming into terms of autofocus speed and higher frame rate, etc., then definitely I think we might see something from Nikon. It's just the question is, when we're looking at the rumored cameras that potentially need to come out this year, DX camera is not there. No rumors whatsoever. So what do you think will be? Will we see the Z50 Mark II? Do you think we all get an expensive DX body first to get all those latest technology in and being very expensive? What do you think is going to come out first?
Yes.
Well, I think Z50 Mark II rehash, which means brings up to date more or less the same 20 megapixel sensor. Lots of people are upset, but life goes on. I mean,
okay, I think that a Z50 Mark II might make sense, but I wouldn't want it to necessarily be called, if it's going to have VR on the sensor, I don't think it should be called the Z50 Mark II. I think that completely redesigning the camera warrants a whole new number.
Call it Z50 VR. Stands for virtual reality. Comes with two lenses.
I think it should... Two sensors. I personally think it should be a Z90 because a Z50 Mark II would still, I feel, be kind of reduced in features. Whereas if it was a Z90, we would expect the VR on the sensor. We'd expect potentially a higher resolution sensor in DX form. We would expect all of those autofocus upgrades that we've wanted that we have in some of the full frame bodies that we don't have in the DX bodies.
And price similar to Fujifilm flagship in that range.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it sits in the sort of like £1,200.
It's going to be more.
£1,500. I wouldn't want it to be up in the Z6 realm.
Well, I can tell you that the most expensive Fujifilm flagship is XH2S and it's priced at £2,235 at the moment.
That's bonkers. I wouldn't spend that much on an APS-C camera.
Well, here you have it, but it's got all the latest and greatest things.
Okay, so if Nikon can do what they did before with the Z8 and the Z9 and make it £1,000 cheaper, then I think it would be okay.
Well, X-T5, which is slightly below XH2S, is priced at £1,650. So still above the price range that you're quoting. So, you know, so there is a market for those bodies, effectively. And obviously there's a market of Nikon users who probably would want to get a small baby Z9, which is not Z8, but actually smaller sensor Z9 in that range. I think it makes sense from the point of releasing this technology that's available now, like in terms of what's focus speed, putting vibration reduction on the sensor, putting the stacked sensor, let's say 26 megapixels, high refresh rate, which means gives you high resolution, 8K, etc., you name it. Yeah. So, and pricing as much, and then trickling it down to Z50. Because if you look at the Z50, it's more of a kind of D7000 series camera, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
While Z90 would be more of a D500 series camera, if we compare it to F-mount cameras.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we bet on Z90.
We're betting on Z90. Just to justify my mental price point, if you like, where I was trying not to set the price point too far above £1,000.
Yeah.
Because I feel that that is kind of the make-break point for a lot of people. It's like, if it's over £1,000, it's outside of my budget.
I see what you mean. Absolutely. And back in the 80s, the cameras were even cheaper, you know. But if we look at the inflation and the cost of living, then those things have increased, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, the D500, an F-mount, full professional DX body, was about £1,700 before it was discontinued. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't that long ago. And that's an all-metal, very capable D5 with a DX sensor camera. But I see what you're saying. Like, mirrorless cameras are more expensive, unfortunately, than their F-mount counterparts. We've also had, you know, inflation, etc.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at D850 versus Z8 pricing, we also can see that Z8 is a little bit more, while everyone is saying that Z8 is D850 replacement. Actually, price-wise, it is more expensive.
It is. It's true.
So tell us what you think about. Would you pay around £2,200 or its equivalent in dollars for a Z90, which is a mini Z9 with a DX sensor? It's a tough question, isn't it? But would you?
Obviously, this question is posed towards DX users, not you full-frame people that don't care about DX.
Exactly. If you're a full-frame user, please refrain from leaving any comments with regard to DX lineup of Nikon cameras. Now, let's go back to DX lineup. Tom Hogan wrote another article, and he's saying that while people complain about lack of DX lenses from Nikon, there are actually around 14 DX lenses now available for Nikon DX system.
Mm-hmm.
So, five of them from Nikon is 12-28, 16-50, 18-140, 24mm and 50-250. Then we also have three Sigma lenses, so 16, 30 and 56.
Mm-hmm.
T.T. Archeson announced a 27mm f2.8, which he reviewed very recently.
Great lens.
Great lens, very inexpensive as well. And also Wheeltrox has five prime lenses as well, 13mm, 23, 33, 56 and 75mm lenses. Or autofocus. We're talking about autofocus lenses at the moment. So obviously there's a lot more manual focus lenses available as well.
Yeah, we've got TT Artisan, 7 Artisans, all those guys, they've done manual focus lenses for the DX format. But having 14 autofocus lenses is actually very impressive.
So what do you think? What else do we need in DX lineup for Nikon to be a viable platform for DX users, APS-C users?
I think that as we discussed on our live stream on Friday, there are a few people who are begging for a professional quality DX lens. arguably, you could use the full frame lenses, no problem there. There were quite a few people that were pointing out that they wanted a 16 to 80 f2.8 to 4 kind of equivalent in the mirrorless mount. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, 2.8 to 4, variable aperture, but still wide open. Yep.
Exactly. And then I think the last thing that we need is an 18 to 300. And to be honest, I don't see any point in adding more DX lenses beyond those two at this point. I'm sure someone will correct me in the comments, but I think that having those two lenses would be sufficient. If you really want more longer telephoto professional lenses, then you've got so many full frame Z lenses to choose from, which are all spectacular. So if you've got the money to put in that direction, put them into a full frame lens. But a 16 to 80, 2.8 to 4, and an 18 to 300, or 16 to 300 or something to be your all in one would kind of close it out for me, I think.
Absolutely. 18 to 300 is going to mean a lot for consumer market. We don't need a bigger and heavy one. Make it small and inexpensive. So the Nikon had two versions, lightweight and heavyweight. Mm-hmm. Heavyweight was about 900 pounds. Lightweight was about 600 pounds or so. And they became cheaper with the time. So yeah, release one of those. Bundle it with kits like Z50 Mark II kit, mm-hmm. and call it a day, because at the end of the day, maybe it won't please professional photographers or keen enthusiasts looking for image quality, but then you will have something like 16 to 80. You will have a full frame lens to choose from, and hopefully 200 to 600 will be available by then as well. But this is a travel lens for people who would buy, let's say, one lens with a camera and call it a day.
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay, now concluding with the 24mm launch, Nikon updated their Nikon Z lenses mirrorless lineup. So we now have all those lenses that have been grayed out before. They are now available in full color, in full rendering on a chart. But also, we also have four lenses that's left to be announced according to many rumors this year. So we have 35mm, 70 to 180, 135 prime, and also 200 to 600.
As we discussed last week on this topic, we kind of went into the whys and wherefores and when we think these things are going to happen. But I will point out the 70 to 180 and 200 600, for those who didn't note, both of those are not marked down as S-line lenses on the actual roadmap itself, while the 35 and the 135 are both marked down as S-line lenses, although we still don't have apertures for any of those. I think we're pretty safe to assume that the 70 to 180 is the f2.8, right?
Yeah, I think so. And it is available for other mounts, so we know what it is. We know it's going to come in, we just don't know when.
Yeah.
And S1728 and 2875 lenses came out of the blue, effectively, you know, just been announced one day without any rumors or anything like this. We expect 70-180 release happen in very similar fashion. Now, obviously, 200-600, as we discussed last week, is the one that probably people are waiting eagerly. And 35 f1.2 lens is the one that we want.
Yeah, I just noticed something. So you notice that they kind of position them on the roadmaps based on, like, here, the 1.2s are side by side. Mm-hmm. So I think we can pretty much safely say the 35 1.2 is going to be.
You're absolutely right.
And then the 135 is lined up with all the 1.8s. So I think we can pretty much safely assume that the 135 is going to be 1.8.
That is very interesting. But at the same time, obviously, yeah, you can't have 135, 1.2. That would be probably gigantic size lens.
It'd be the size of a house. Yeah. And then the 17-28, 28-75, they haven't even tried to particularly hide the fact that the 70 to 180 is in line with those lenses. Yeah. 200 to 600, obviously down there, a bit further down below the variable aperture 4 to 6.3 lenses, makes me think that potentially it's going to be a 4.5 to 6.3 or an f4 to 6.3 or something like that, because they seem to, and this may just be me hypothesizing, which is fine, but I think that they're kind of positioning them on the roadmap roughly where their apertures are going to sit.
But you know, Tube Map also looks very neat, London, but it's not exactly how the actually tunnels are built, if you see what I mean.
It's true.
So there is a chance of that just being a graphical representation, but you're absolutely right. It looks very interesting. So what do you reckon? What's going to come out first?
I hope, for the sake of all the people on the internet, the 200 to 600. For your sakes, I hope that the 200 to 600 comes out next. It's not a lens that I am desperate for myself, but I know a lot of people that would love the 200 to 600. I personally would be quite happy with any of the primes, or even the 70 to 180 if it's an inexpensive 2.8 zoom.
Because we care about you.
Yeah, we do.
But personally, I like 35 1.2 and 135 1.8.
I love the idea of that.
Now, moving on. Apparently, NX Ready logo that we talked about a few months ago is apparently a trademark for the new smartphone application.
Yes. Now, this is a new free smartphone app that's already listed in the Google Play Store, but not yet available in the Apple Store. So the spiel says this. You can use your smartphone, the operation of which is already familiar to you, patronizing much, to easily configure your shooting settings, even if you don't know how to use your camera or the terminology associated with it. Now, you can also configure settings by simply specifying the situation, subject, and results you hope to achieve. And the settings you've configured can then be transferred to the camera and applied prior to shooting. Well, that kind of just takes all the work out of taking pictures, if you ask me.
That's true. I mean, looking at the screenshots published by Nikon Rumors, I mean, it will teach you how to take portraits, how to take self-portraits. How do you take self-portrait? I don't know. Also, it is asking, would you like a softened background or keep everything sharp? And you press the answer and it will tell you what to do. I mean, it's very interesting. But one of the actually screenshots says user settings bank. I wonder if that would allow us to maybe transfer some custom settings banks or shooting settings banks into the software on the phone and then transfer it back or something like this. If you've got maybe two Z8s or two Z9s, etc. One interesting comment that came up in the comment section on Nikon Rumors is people say, well, can you transfer Z9 shooting banks to Z8? No, you can't, because apparently they're slightly different.
You can't, sadly. You can always transfer and save user settings from the same camera model. So if you've got two Z9s, you can copy from one and paste in the other. And same if you have two Z8s, but you can't do it across models. And unfortunately, that's never been the case for any camera.
That's true. I mean, it's also an interesting thing because they're releasing a separate app from a SnapBridge. So I guess we got NX Ready, NX Tether, you name it. And I think Nikon has been one of those companies like Fujifilm just releasing another application for smartphones every year or so and just abandoning the old ones.
Yeah, so what one commenter on Nikon Rumors said, I was able to download the app to my old Samsung Galaxy 9 whatever and use it on my Z30. It looks like a way to import presets, then potentially save them to U1, U2, etc. You can transfer photos to your iPhone via SnapBridge. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something aimed at someone new to photography. I will say that connecting to the phone via Wi-Fi with the app was very, very fast. That makes a nice change.
Oh, that's good news. Now, let's move on to some weird news. Apparently, Nikon blocked an international sale of a used 18-55mm lens on eBay.
Yeah, it is really strange. Apparently, the listing was removed by a request directly from Nikon. They're just, well, we know. We don't know anything else.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I think it's just weird. I mean, there's some videos come out on YouTube. That's absolutely fine. I don't really see it as an issue. Now, what I say is an issue is this whole Nikon Z8 third-party battery things blowing up right now. We talked about it a little bit last week, and definitely do check it out because Tom Hogan put a nice article talking about different voltages between different batteries. That's the reason why, let's say, Nikon batteries work and some older third-party batteries don't. But there's more things came up. And apparently, Tom Hogan wrote another article showing the reports that had been given to him with the Nikon batteries. And apparently he says that in official Nikon support, they list NL15 A, B, and C as compatible, not the original 15. Well, NL15 will work, but the later version, which will have LION20.
Yes, not the O1.
Not the O1. O1 was recalled back in the day. Don't you remember that?
It was recalled, and that was because there was an issue with it with the D500s.
Correct.
And walking encyclopedia of useless knowledge, apparently.
But it's all right. This podcast is short, so we can talk about it. Our viewers don't mind.
So there was an issue with lithium ion O1 batteries, and Nikon did recall them. If you were a user of the D500, you could get a free replacement, and it would be an Enel 15, but with lithium ion 20 on it instead. Now, it's interesting that Nikon have decided the first lithium ion O1 batteries are no good for the Z8, but there was a voltage issue with them with D500. So I assume that that would be perpetuated in the later cameras anyway. Mm-hmm. Now, citing an article from our mate Tom, he said, remember, an overheated lithium ion battery is not something you want to have to deal with. Pushing energy in or pulling it out of a battery wrong can overheat it. Extreme heat has a tendency to deform in the internal batteries. There are actually two battery cells within an Enel 15. And once deformed, they become a potential fire hazard. That fire is difficult to put out as it doesn't burn like a regular fire. Now, I will second that in saying that we have had people who've bought third party or even fake Nikon batteries online
that.
And they've overheated in the camera. They have actually physically expanded and then the whole camera basically has to be sent off.
We couldn't remove it.
Yeah, couldn't remove the battery. We've also had it where someone has said, my battery's not working in the camera. I bought it online. They've sent it to us in the package. And when it arrived, it was kaput. I mean, it was like a mess. Do you remember you received something?
Yes.
And it was like a total mess of, anyway, it was unpleasant to say the least. So obviously, Nick, on doing this for your own safety, people who get upset by things like this and conspiracy theorists with their tinfoil hat say it's because they want to maximize on profits. To be honest, I don't think they would be that bothered by it if they didn't think it was going to be a health hazard. So as Tom says, the bottom line is just use ENEOL 15A, B or C in your ZA, as they suggest. Keep it simple, folks.
Yeah, I mean, my point being here is those batteries are not that expensive. And if you buy in ZA, which is $4,000 camera, I mean, spend whatever, $70, whatever it costs in your country, to get a real official battery. I would be more concerned if ENEOL 18 battery, third-party batteries, that Z9 won't work with, because those batteries are quite expensive. And for those folks, they would need to spend close to £200 to get a spare battery.
Yeah.
While ENEOL 15 is reasonably priced, in my opinion. So don't be a cheapskate. Buy an official battery.
But even if you're complaining about the fact that one of your older batteries doesn't work, the older lithium-ion 01 ENEOL 15s are more than 7 years old. So you've had 7 years plus from this battery. We're talking D7000 was when that battery came out. So some of those batteries are going to be over a decade old. It's okay to upgrade, I think.
Absolutely. And as Tom puts it, as internal electronic designs and requirements changed, Nikon altered how batteries are dealt with and what signals had to be present and within certain tolerance on signaling pin. So yes, manufacturing has changed, design has changed. They draw more voltage, they work slightly differently. Therefore, yes, the older batteries won't work. Third-party batteries won't work. Just buy an official battery. It's not that expensive overall. You can't buy it now, wait for a couple of months. You have an internal charging within the battery.
You can just plug in a power bank.
Exactly. It's not a big deal.
All right. Now, moving on to some third-party news for you. Seven Artisans have announced a new 24 1.4 APS-C lens for Nikon Z mount. This is another DX lens to add to the ever-expanding and growing DX lens lineup.
Right after the Nikon announcement as well. I mean, the good news is, obviously, the Nikon one is very inexpensive, but if you want it cheaper, this one's only $109.
Bargain.
It doesn't have autofocus, so it's manual focus only. Keep that in mind. But if you need that focal distance and you don't want to buy a Nikon one, you have an option from Seven Artisans.
There you go. Now, we also have Delkin, who we are big fans of here. They've released a new CF Express Type B memory card range. This is called the Power range, and essentially they're Gen 4 of their CF Express cards. They have additional capacities, very fast write speeds at lower prices. They're obviously not going to be as fast as your Delkin Black, so if you're shooting in 8K or 120 frames per second on your Z8 and Z9, you might want to opt for Delkin Black, but we've got capacities from 128 gig all the way through to 2 terabytes in a memory card.
Yeah, and this memory cards, while being cheaper than Delkin Black, should still support Z9 and Z8, the bit rates, video recording, high frame rates, etc. So while the max read speed is about 1,780 megabytes and max write speed is 1,700 megabytes per second, the sustained write speed, which is more important, is 1,490 megabytes per second, which should be good enough for cameras like Z8 and Z9.
There you go. Now for some reviews for you. We've got the 26mm f2.8 on the Z8. This is a first look real world testing by Matt Irwin. He road tests on his e-scooter, the Z8 and the 26mm Pancake.
As you do.
Mm-hmm.
We should have a race.
An e-scooter race.
I'm very glad that Matt is wearing a helmet. You all should be wearing a helmet if you're on a scooter, on a bicycle, or if you're just walking on the street.
Always wear a helmet.
Got to be prepared.
You never be too careful.
Yeah. The next one up is Nikon Z8 Final Review, What's the Catch? By Peter Papa at Petapixel.
Mm-hmm. That's Chris. For anyone who doesn't know.
He's Peter Papa now.
Mm-hmm. And then we have Nikon Z8. It's the Price Stupid.
Yeah.
It's a great title.
That's true. It's by Three Blind Men and Elephant Production. This man with his soothing voice can sell you anything.
He said if he only had one camera, it would be a Z8.
And then he says, but, and then he rumbles for another 10 minutes. I enjoy this. It's like listening to jazz. This man is fantastic.
The Three Blind Men and an Elephant Papa.
Thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you very much for watching and or listening. Please give us a like and a subscribe if you're on YouTube. We're at 19,000 something subscribers now.
300 already, and that means that we need about 700 subscribers to hit the 20K mark.
That's what we want.
Why is it important? Because it opens the door for all the brands to send us free things, and we're finally going to become rich.
I want the little silver button. What do you? It's 100K.
It's 100K. It's still way to go. I want a Lamborghini, but I think it's 1 million K. But the man can dream. Someone told me 20K where it's at, and we're gonna go with a small step. So if you haven't subscribed yet, definitely help us. Please
help us to help you. We are also on podcast platforms. So if you're listening there, you can give us a follow, a rating, a review. All that good stuff.
Everything, absolutely. Do leave us a review on the podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. YouTube Music, also in the United States, have a podcasting now, so we're available there. So if you don't want to watch, but listen to those wonderful voices, not as soothing as the gentleman from Three Blind Men and Elephant Productions, but if you want to listen to a perfect British accent and Becky, do listen to us on the podcast platform.
Yes. We're also on the internet at Instagram. I'm at Rebecca_Danese. The shop is at Nikon at Grays.
And I'm at Konstantin Kochkin. We do publish photographs with the lenses that we review on this channel. So if you want to see those samples, definitely check them out.
There you go.
We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.